So taking it further, here we are talking about another model called the Big Five model. Big Five. As the name indicates, it's talking about five traits. Personality traits. What's a trait? A trait is a tendency for a person to behave in a certain way. It's a tendency for a person to behave in a certain way. Tendency means he is about to behave, but the behavior has not come out in the form of an action. I have spoken about the iceberg model of behavior, where the behavior is outside water, what you and I see about each other. Below that behavior, we have got attitudes, perceptions, and values inside the water. That's inside me. If I want to explain trait, I would like to look at it from a trait is nothing but an attitude which is yet to become a behavior. An attitude which is yet to become a behavior. How do I know the attitude is there? It shows in the form of my body language, my words, my facial expressions, gestures, etc. We've heard about angry young man, the famous Amitabh Bachchan. Now, when he walks into those old movies of his, he can see that demeanor of his pretty angry. You can make out, anybody can say he's having anger in him. He may be talking nicely, but the anger is seen by people. So a trait is noticed. A trait is not conclusively proven that you are angry, but there's a tendency to get angry. That's a trait. So these five traits are being covered under Big Five model. Extroversion, agreeableness, conscientiousness, emotional stability, and openness to experience. Five of them. It's famously called as a Big Five model. What are they? Let's try to understand. Extroversion. Extroverts get energy by interacting with people. Introverts, on the other hand, get energy by doing things themselves. Extroverts are assertive, sociable, talkative, gregarious. Now, this definition has actually gone through a transformation in the recent years. The classical way of looking at extroverts is they are very outgoing, gregarious, they are very sociable, they talk a lot. But the new research has said something different. By and large, they do that, but all of them who do that need not be extroverts. All people who talk, all people who are gregarious, all people who are outgoing need not be extroverts. Many a time, people put on a behavior to get certain things done. I come across HR people from recruitment field, they come and tell me this was a bad recruit. And I've noticed that during the interview, however hard you may try to determine the person's characteristics, it's quite challenging. So there is a sales job in which it is expected that the person should be talkative, he should be going and making cold calls, meeting people, go out of his way. That's expected from him. The person comes and he talks. He puts on an act of being an extrovert. I cannot jump to a conclusion saying that he's an extrovert. So if I'm the interviewer, I've got to have the maturity to look beyond that. At times it doesn't happen because we are human beings. So I hire this youngster thinking that he'll do perform very well. And finally, when he goes, he starts working, I find he's not an extrovert. He's not the type of behavior display that he does, which suits the role. And it turns out to be he's a bad recruit, a wrong recruit, because he's not having the characteristics. He's basically an introvert on a day-to-day basis. You see, the way I look at people is, how do you orient yourself on a routine day? See, when I tell you to make a talk, make a presentation, you'll prepare and come and you'll make a presentation. And when you present, you are projecting. But when I ask you to make an impromptu talk without even preparing, that's the time your natural self comes out. So these classifications given about extroversion, introversion, I would like all of you to look at it from a very broader angle. By and large, extroverts are assertive, By and large, they are sociable. By and large, talkative, blind. By and large, gregarious. But not all extroverts are like this. Not all people who do this are extroverts either. You got to keep yourself open. When you are keeping yourself open, you don't slot people into compartments. That is the biggest pitfall about personality tests. People interpret it and they slot people. When you slot, you make a conclusion about that person. When it comes to people and behavior, do not make conclusions. Make only interim inferences. Make only interim inferences. Meaning, as I know him today, he is like this. Which means, he may be different tomorrow. Changes take place. If you have this open view towards behavior, you will be able to manage behavior. Otherwise, you'll start saying, this guy, he's always like that. You'll start slotting people. The biggest tragedy about all of us is we start slotting people. Right? So, taking the slides, extroverts are assertive, sociable, talkative and gregarious. Introverts are shy, unassertive, reserved and timid by and large. Extroverts are sociable, assertive, love and they love talking. Introverts are least sociable, quite passive and talk less. Now, anybody who is listening to me or reading this will get a feeling that introverts are no good. And society somewhere indirectly supports this. It's very incorrect. Introverts are excellent as extroverts. Both of them are important, are inclusive in every team. They need to be there. One plays one role, the other one plays the other role. So you cannot decimate somebody's role. If I want to get my presentation prepared, an introvert does a good job. If I want my presentation to be done, to be delivered, then an extrovert does a good job. Both of them are important for the task. So this is one thing we need to keep in mind. Next, we talk about a trait called agreeableness. Some people have got this quality of being cooperative, warm and trusting. They have this quality of thinking from the viewpoint of others. These are the agreeable people. There are the others who are less agreeable. They are not readily agreeable. They are very cold. And by their talk, they antagonize others. They start hurting others. They start creating negative energy in others. And these are the people who focus on the weaknesses rather than strengths. So this is the second trait which the Big Five model talks about. Agreeable people are good-natured, cooperative and trusting. Disagreeable people are uncooperative, ill-tempered and distrusting. Do you mean to say that disagreeable people are bad people? It's a behavior. They have chosen a behavior because it works for them. One sentence I want all of you to record. People behave the way they behave because the behavior works. People behave the way they behave because the behavior works. If by shouting and screaming I've got my work done once, if I have got it done twice, then I will start using shouting and screaming to get the work done. The behavior will go through a transformation only when a situation gives them a very, very critical push. If somebody shakes them up and tells them, look, what you're doing is not correct. If you continue doing this, you will lose this, which is very dear to you. Then the person starts thinking, not changing, thinking about changing his behavior. So I want all of us to look at these qualities, which are bipolar. Both of them have got its own usefulness. Both of them are as good or as bad as the other. I want all of you to focus, what do I do with a disagreeable person? Because we reject disagreeable people. A disagreeable person has got its own utility. He is doing what he's doing because it works for him. Can I manage that behavior? Can I use that behavior for a constructive purpose? A good behavioral scientist will do that. Right? A good manager, a good leader. Then we talk about conscientiousness. It comes from the word conscience. This refers to the work governing activity by conscience. People are very sincere. They work with the conscience. They want to give a day's, honest day's work. So they are reliable, they are dependable and persistent. They got a lot of commitment in what they do. These are the people with high conscientiousness level. There are people with low level, and these are easily distracted, disorganized, unreliable, and they don't stick on to what their conscience tells. They just play by the day, play by the minute. Conscientiousness, people who are conscientiousness, who are having consciousness, have, they feel responsible, they are dependable, extension of the earlier slide, okay, they are persistent and they are achievement oriented. The fourth trait is emotional stability. This trait is one in which people absorb actions, reactions, views, outcomes, attitudes, etc. with a stable behavior. Now this requires what I have spoken about in one of the earlier modules, emotional intelligence. Emotional stability comes only when you stay with the situation, handle the emotions, manage it and go further. I see many people, they run away from disturbing emotions in the office, with people, etc. But people who stay there, understand the emotions and the reasons why they are happening, and they manage it, they develop emotional intelligence and emotional stability. They are calm, self-confident and secure. They are able to handle situations as they come. People with low emotional stability, we have a lot of them today. They are nervous, anxious and insecure. And they create trouble for others. Because emotionally, if you are not secure, you start perceiving things very, very differently from a person who is emotionally secure. They draw your energy, they drain your energy when you are dealing with them. Next comes, the last one is openness to experience under the Big Five model. These employees have got the following traits. They are imaginative. Business ventures can come into existence only when they cross imaginative stage. They are artistically very sensitive. People are sensitive to changes in environment. Intellectual enables people to think and analyze rationally and make better decisions. Individuals who are dependable, reliable, careful, organized, hardworking, persistent and achievement oriented tend to have higher job performance. Individuals with high conscientiousness level develop higher levels of job knowledge as they exert great level of effort. And there's a positive relation between personality traits and job satisfaction. If my personality traits are supporting my goal and I know my role very clearly, then automatically I'll be job satisfied. If I'm not satisfied with my job and I work backwards, then I have to ask myself a question. Have I understood my job? Do I know what is my job goal? If so, what should I do further? What's the role I need to adopt? What actions I need to take? If these are understood, then I will be finding myself developing the personality traits required for that. The tendency towards acting in a particular way to fulfill the goal. Now we come to what is called a self-concept. Self-concept is very, very tricky. What is my concept about myself? For me, in another discussion, I speak about four different stages. You can make a note of it. There's a thing called self-image, which all of us have. Self-image is my image when I actually look at the mirror. When I look at myself in the mirror, how do I feel about myself? Do I feel nice about myself? I may be short, I may be having a paunch, I may be dark, I may be not so good in my color, maybe I have dark color, so I feel. Now this is all the way I am. Self-image takes you to self-acceptance, second stage. Self-acceptance takes you to self-esteem. I feel good about myself. Any which way I'm made, I'm short, I'm dark, I'm skinny, I'm too fat, but I am accepting myself, self-acceptance, self-esteem. Self-esteem leads me to a positive self-concept. So self-concept involves interaction of my own background, psychology, values, social, economic, religious factors. What do I think about myself? It's not to be confused with self-concept is about the way I look at myself. Not to be confused with the way I act with people. I know people who are very soft-spoken, achieving types of people, very nice human beings in behavior. Soft-spoken, achievers, very good in behavior. They strike a rapport with everybody. But when you go closely, their self-concept is very low. They do not feel that they are very good inside them. That eats into their inner system. So not everybody who is outgoing, not everybody who is an achiever, not everybody who is highly qualified, not everybody who is successful in life need to have a high self-concept. Self-concept is so tricky, so internal to the person, it shows during critical moments of his or her life. I repeat, your self-concept is shown at times in your life when some critical incidents are happening. Because most of the time, what is personality? It's a projection. Personality is a projection. Personality comes from the word persona, Latin word, which means speaking through a mask. Speaking through a mask. So I'm projecting all the time. When I'm projecting, I'm putting on a behavior. But my self-concept, my true self-concept will come when I'm not projecting, what is called as a true personality. There are two personalities. One is role personality, the other one is true personality. Self-concept is connected with to my true personality. How do I feel about myself when I do nothing? When I do not socialize? When I'm left off from the whole world? On a day when I'm so-called feeling low? What is my self-concept? Now that every one of us know how we deal with self-concept. We know it. Recognize it. And just as you have a self-concept, everybody has got a self-concept. Projections do not always talk about your self-concept. Projections are projections. When there's a critical incident happening in a team, in an organization, the self-concept of people come out. And a good leader identifies that and addresses it and manages the self-concept. To handle your self-concept and the self-concept of others, you need a good amount of emotional intelligence. Very important. Very tricky. Self-esteem and self-efficacy are concerned with self-concept. I find meaningfulness of doing some work. I feel I need to contribute to the world. This comes when you have self-esteem and self-efficacy. Self-esteem is concerned with people's self-perceived competence and self-image. Self-efficacy deals with the self-perception, my perception of how well I can cope with the situations that arise. Do I feel confident that I can handle risks? Do I feel confident that I can handle certain types of projects? Self-efficacy will decide that. Self-esteem is concerned with perceived competence and self-efficacy with perceived performance. One is to do with my ability and the strength of my ability, which is competence. The second is talking about the performance itself, the action. So a self-esteem is a starting point on which the self-efficacy is built up. So if my perceived performance, if my self-efficacy is high, then it means my self-esteem is also pretty good. And these are two important things that we need today. One of the ways to understand whether you have a high self-concept is, ask yourself, what is your happiness factor? Ask yourself, how well you feel about yourself and the world. The world is the way it is. How do I look at the world? Another way of looking at self-concept is, if my self-concept is good, then I will treat everybody with a lot of respect. Respect means I treat human beings as human beings. Treat them as people who are also having their own self-respect and self-concept. Now these are some of the indicators about people whose self-concept is very high. Self-image, self-concept, finally. And how you go about doing it? You need to go through the journey. This is a very important contributor to your personality. Now we come to what are called as the determinants of personality. What determines your personality? This is again old theory, which is again now getting challenged. This theory says there are contributory factors that determine your personality. It almost tells you, it is conclusive, that if you have this, you have had it. You have been like that only. Need not be. First one we are discussing is hereditary. It's there in your genes. Certain physical and psychological characteristics like features, physical features, temperament, biological rhythms, energy levels are inherited. Is it true? Modern studies are saying it was the case at that point of time when the studies were being done. But newer revelations have taken place. Society itself has developed collectively from certain values to certain other values today. And so, this particular characteristic is no more valid totally. We have people who have come from unfortunate backgrounds. Hereditary was not good. They were unwell, they had some hereditary health issues also. But they have extremely well, they have done in life. Traits like shyness, fear, height, distress are caused by inherited genetic characteristics. Not totally true in the modern theory, but this has an indication. If you come from a family where everybody is having some sort of a congenital disorder, it need not be always carried on to generation to generation. To that level today, our research is telling us this. Right? Next comes environment. Environment is the surroundings around me. The environmental factors are those which encircle us and influence our behavior. Culture is the most important environment that influences personality. And culture is transmitted across generations and learned in contemporary period. Now the author is talking about only one environment, which is a culture. There are other environment also. The day-to-day working that you're doing, the office where you're sitting, is another environment that keeps impacting your personality. Is it true all the time? If I work in a very noisy surrounding like a production shop floor, does it affect my personality of being a noisy person, distracted, etc.? Need not be. It is one of the indicators that tell you that if you are in this environment, there is a likelihood of you developing this personality. A very filthy slum. Environment is very filthy, everything is very noisy, nothing is properly organized, dirty place. A youngster is born and brought up there. So, would the environmental factors affect the youngster totally? Need not be. Need not be. We have very good performers in academies from the slums who are coming from such environment. Their role percentages are very strong, better than what we expect them to be. So, these are again indicators. There is something called the human will. The human will is so strong that it can transcend hereditary, environment, and the next point which I'm discussing, situation. Situation is a time dependent event. Right now the lecture is going on, this is a situation. So if I'm put in a situation, this theory says exhibitive personality traits change based on situational demands. Exhibitive personality traits change based on situational demands. If there's a high pressure situation into which a person is put, he is basically a very calm and quiet person. This theory tells you that in that high pressure demanding situation, he would develop a tendency towards behaving like that. This need not be the case. It happens by and large, but need not be always. Different situations demand different aspects of one's personality. Agreed. Situation influences an individual to realize and exhibit his potential personality in tune with the requirements. It gives him an opportunity to grow. To give an example, in an organization, we have a youngster who's got fantastic potential to grow. Potential means inside him, the characteristics are there. But he's not brought it out into action. So one manager will say, give him solid pressure, he will work. So he puts him into a very arduous job with a positive intention that he will grow. But wonder of wonder, shock of shock, this fellow will withdraw, he will run away from the company. He might. In another well-intentioned manager, he'll say, since this youngster has got a potential, let me put him into a situation which is supportive. And with the supportive situation, the potential will come out. Now they put him in a supportive situation, hoping that he will develop. But again, shock of shocks, this fellow starts becoming complacent, he doesn't do anything. I'm talking about real cases that actually happen in life. So I'm not disputing this particular theory. I'm only telling you that these theories, this particular theory, the determinants of personality, is by and large applicable in most cases, but one has to take everything on a case-to-case basis. Don't reject people just because they come from a certain hereditary background. Don't reject people because they come from certain environment. Don't reject people because they come from a certain situation. And this is very, very, very tricky. I feel like narrating a particular situation, a particular incident that happened in one of the companies where I was working. Okay. I live in Bombay and Mumbai rather. And there was a senior manager who was staying in a place called Dharavi, which is a slum of Mumbai. And I had a peon who was staying in the swank locality called Juhu. Now people used to wonder, oh, peon living in Juhu and the manager living in Dharavi, or close to Dharavi. Now what is the image that you are getting? People who are from Mumbai who are listening to me, the manager from Dharavi, you are living in Dharavi? People used to look down on him because there was a perception that people who live in Dharavi are not okay, their personality will not be okay. Is it not true? And the peon living in Juhu, they said, wow, you're a very lucky guy living in such a swank place. These are the perception people had. Until we came to know that this gentleman living in that particular environment called Dharavi was living in a beautiful flat. He was having a good surroundings within a flat. And the other chap was living in an ancestral home, what we called as Wadis in Mumbai. A very good ancestral home, and he was living in a very humble environment. But the moment you hear that you are living in Juhu and so-and-so is living in Dharavi, people have these funny notions. Cut out this. Go and actually check out what is what. In an interview also, when you're sitting in the interview panel, selection process ke time pe, go on a case-to-case basis, because we never know, there is always a diamond hiding in a coal mine. There's a diamond hiding in a coal mine. It is up to you to determine that this is a diamond. These are all indicators, but these indicators are not end-alls. These indicators are not end-alls. One has to go beyond the indicators and see, explore. Right? Now we talk about personality development. What does it mean? It means your personality, by design or default, develops. By default, everybody personality is given an opportunity to develop. Why and how? When your life changes biologically from a kid to a youngster to a middle-aged man to an old man, automatically there is an opportunity for you to address your roles. Alternatively, you design it. Preparing for the retirement for a person who's working. Preparing to enter into college for a youngster who's just coming out of 10th or 12th. This is preparatory way of personality development. Either you design it, or situations will give you opportunity to design your personality development. Choice is in your hands. Most cases, people do not design their personality development. They allow situation to develop it. Sometimes it is painful. A young lady, a young girl, she knows she is getting married. Could she prepare her personality to be a married woman well in advance? The answer is yes. It becomes very smooth, easy for her to transit. A youngster in a B school like you, who's about to get into employment after a year or two, can he prepare himself to face industry? He can. Now, these are things which doesn't come to people because they're caught up in their present role, in the present role personality. So, what we are covering in the next few slides is different types of personality theories. Personality development theories. Classical theories, old theories, which are the cornerstone of personality. We'll be talking about Freudian stages. Sigmund Freud, the famous psychologist, Freudian stages, he defined some stages through which people go through personality development. Then we got Erikson stages, adult life states by Levinson, Hall's career stage model and the model which is called as immaturity to maturity approach by Chris Argyris. These are the five things which I'll be discussing in the subsequent slides. Let's take the first one, Freudian stages. Sigmund Freud, German, was of the opinion that everything starts with childhood and it's in the brain. He also believed that everything that we do is coming down to sex. Sex not to be taken in a negative way. Sex means our entire thinking process, any action I do, any words I talk is ultimately coming to sex. That was his contention. He was disputed later by other people like Carl Jung and all. But Sigmund Freud had this particular type of a theory which is strongly promoted. And he had this to say. He believed that childhood has a bearing on adult behavior and consciousness. What happens to me in my childhood has a lot of bearing on my present behavior as an adult and my consciousness also. This was his contention. So according to his model, there are five stages of psychological development which influence the personality of the person. The first is called as a oral, second is anal, third is phallic, fourth is latency, and the fifth one is genital. They may all sound as if you are talking about the organs of the body. They are. So one has to understand this discussion from a very broader and a matured angle. So don't jump to conclusions saying that this is all profane, this is all very silly. Look into it, because you need to understand behavior from understanding how these theories developed. Let's take the first one, oral stage. From birth to the age of 1 year. So for the first 12 months after you're born, this personality of yours develops. Biological needs are reduced through mouth. Everything is mouth oriented. That is why it is called as oral. Your personality is based on oral. Haven't you seen small toddlers till the age of 1, maybe a little beyond also, they start eating anything around. Their life is based on oral because they are growing. This is his way of looking at it. Excessive or insufficient stimulation leads to development of oral passive personality in adulthood with characteristics of exploitations and dominations of others. Now this is a little deeper. If a child at the age of 1 or 12 months and little more is given too much of pampering into food habits and etc. etc. I am giving you an example. I am not talking about food alone. If the oral stage is given too much of pampering, then what happens is physically he grows to become a child of 3 or 4 or 5 years, but that part of it will become a part of his consciousness, that over pampering and over stimulation. As nurturers, as parents, we have to realize that when the child is growing to the next stage, we must encourage him to develop that personality. And it's a weaning process. Weaning means I unlearn and I relearn. I unlearn and relearn. And how to do it is a skill. How to do it is a skill. How the parents or the nurturers have to encourage the child to transit into the new personality is a skill. It can't be done with threat. It can't be done with excessive love or something. It has to be done in a manner in which he or she feels comfortable transiting. That's a skill.